All right, everybody. Welcome to this next episode of the Renegade HPG podcast. Today, I'm joined by Mr. Robert Ash, the patron saint of BattleTech collectors everywhere. So if you haven't caught Bobby's name up on the BattleTech trade and sell page on Facebook, then you certainly check that out if you need to add anything to that collection. But not only is Bobby there a avid advocate for helping other people build their own collections, but his own collection is pretty amazing too. And I know that he's made comment before. I think I caught it possibly using that to set up a BattleTech museum at some point in the future, which we'll definitely be kind of chatting about that possibility. But yeah, we're going to be geeking out about kind of the history of BattleTech products, which Bobby is definitely kind of a leading expert of, as well as exploring the more obscure corners of that particular rabbit hole. And then wherever else our mutual love of the BattleTech universe takes us in this conversation, we'll be happy to dive into that. But Bobby, thanks for joining me for this episode of Renegade HPG.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I would definitely throw the disclaimer out there. I am in no way an expert in anything, much less anything BattleTech. My wife will validate that.
Fair. But as we get older, we all realize more how much we don't know, you know, and that's kind of, and just appreciate those things that we don't know. And rather than thinking that we know everything, right?
It's definitely turned into that. I've found that with BattleTech, even as much collecting as I'm trying to do at this point right now in my life, I literally find something new weekly.
It's awesome.
It's pretty crazy.
Well, what are some of those surprises that you found along the way? What are some kind of obscure or pretty amazing BattleTech products that you've kind of stumbled along that that most of us out there in the world won't even know existed?
I would say I was able to pick up from Robert's collection the Wolf Dragon. And instead of it being called a House Davion, it was called House of Davion patch. They were like the original. Those are pretty obscure. There's not too many. Even in checking around with some of the guys, they've only ever seen it come up twice. And one of those is the ones I just happened to snag. I would say things like right here behind me in the gold chrome, that was just a one-off when they were doing the Joyride miniatures. The company overseas that was painting them, they sent couple of chrome ones to Joyride just for them to have, I guess, it as a special type of thing, but they gave it to the guy who originally painted all the Joyride toys, so like the Mad Cats and all that. They just gave it to him as like a thank you for all the work that he had done. And it's one of those interesting facts. If you look at the Joyride Mad Cat on the side, there's these little things that stick out. They're actually fuel tanks from a T-72 tank model, because the mold lines were really, really bad and he wanted to cover them up.
Oh, wow.
So he figured, oh, well, people will think they're a gun or something like that. So it was just, there's just so many crazy things. When you look at what FASA did, I've been trying to find somebody that has records of like who FASA had deals with to partner with merchandise and what was approved and not approved. And comes down to most of it was in some fashion, I guess, a lot of it approved. It was before fan made became really crazy, like it is nowadays. But there's no records of it. It's like, who did they have partnerships with and deals with for just making the dice from Armory and the pins and the keychains with Reaper? And there's just, I haven't been able to find anybody that has any kind of like actual record of what product was made out there.
Well, there's definitely, kind of as I cruise eBay, whenever I kind of get a moment, and there's just always things that pop up there that I'm not even aware of, and hopefully if it pops up and it's something that I want, then my wallet's ready to kind of make that dive. But it's like between the trade and sell and eBay, thankful for those things for helping me kind of build that collection. And, I know eBay gets a lot of crap, but if you're patient enough, eventually you can snag something, or an auction that ends at an obscure hour of the day that nobody wants to set their alarm for 3 a.m. in the morning, you know, which I've definitely done before, to wake up for 3 minutes to put a bid in and go back to sleep.
Well, it's one of those crazy things, you know, talking to other people, that everything will come back around eventually on eBay if you wait long enough.
Yeah, definitely.
You got to have that patience. For sometimes, though, when you see something, you're like, man, yeah. I don't have that. I need that.
It's tempting. Yeah, the my most recent addition was that the old promo poster with the classic Warhammer pose, and then on the bottom it had the Tales of Black Widow and then the Fox's Teeth picture, and I'd seen that. I didn't even know that exists. That popped up on eBay a couple months ago, but it sold for like $130. I can't do that. So I waited and
found somebody. All because of her pose and the.
Oh yeah. Well, I was like, for even me, it was like, I wouldn't mind if it was just the regular one. You know, I like those, those two arts, those two cover arts and those two source books are two of my favorites. You know, Jim Holloway does some pretty awesome work there, but yeah, I actually ordered a frame for it. I think it might be even getting delivered today or maybe tomorrow. So that'll definitely be kind of going up behind me. It's kind of keep some company for the blueprints that are back there. But in that process, kind of finding all those obscure stuff, you know, I see, you know, there's stuff, it's not just stuff in the US, right? You know, you got all these markets kind of in Germany and wherever else is producing BattleTech. And, you know, for me, even just kind of doing searches for this channel just to find good graphics to use for YouTube thumbnails and not, it's kind of like this just, everything you click opens up another couple options of things that you find, and, you know, finding kind of all the German novels. And I was aware that, you know, there were German prints of the novels that had different covers and different art. But then I started seeing that, I think that there's actually novels that are only printed in foreign languages. Am I right about that?
Yep. Yeah they're so, only in German. There's a whole slew of things over there that are printed. There's even some source books that are only in German that you can get here.
Yeah, no, there's another source book. I think it has the cover of the Wolf Pack, that illustration on it. There's a source book that's been tricky to find. It looks like it's, I don't know if it's like a fan-made source book. You know what I'm talking about? Yeah,
it's with the two. The one that I wish we would get translated, is there's an Intersphere Atlas in German that is like all the planets with information on every planet.
Wow. Yeah,
it's pretty crazy. There's just like it's amazing when you start looking at even going back to FASA, you know, I'm trying to find like the different box sets. There's like, I have a box set in Polish, I have Portuguese, there's Battle Space in French, there's the whole Japanese line, and all that, and those go for kind of crazy prices, and I've been able to get a few, and that's one of those things now that I'm trying to branch out and try to start getting that international stuff. But like, I know there's novels actually that were printed in Russian and Hungarian.
Oh wow.
That I would love to track down. There's the second edition box set in Hebrew that I'm trying to track down. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, I've been having fun with the trading card game lately and making a bunch of custom cards and finding, you know, the art is number one, you know, when I'm making those, and so finding good art. So I might recruit you if you're willing to scan some of those obscure kind of German ones to get some new art to that collection, because, you know, the art from the old novels was some great stuff, that original FASA run, and then kind of it went the way of, you know, the 90s, you know, the same decade that produced us the old Power of the Force Star Wars figures that were all like gem jocks and questionable decisions for illustration back in the day, but fortunately we've come back full circle, and it's got some great artists working on stuff these days. Well, what are some of the kind of the hardest to track down things that you found out there that that kind of, you know, not necessarily just in terms of price, but just kind of, you know, tracking them down and you know.
So some of it has been obviously some of the battle droid stuff. If you're into collecting the battle droids, some of that's going to be just tough in general to find.
Yeah.
There's actually one battle droid I have still not been able to find in blister. That's the oval base Marauder.
Okay.
I got a couple not in blister. Mm-hmm. No, obviously at some point there had to be one in blister. But I have not been able to track down even finding somebody that has one that they don't even want to part with, but they just have one.
Yeah.
Or that they've seen. I haven't found anybody that's ever even seen one.
Wow.
So that's,
you know, or at least not for 35 years, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. And they don't really, even some of the older guys that I've talked to, they don't remember ever seeing it. It's just like all of a sudden, like, oh, here's an Oval Base Marauder, Battle Droid Marauder.
Huh.
And they don't necessarily remember, you know, buying it in a store and opening the pack.
Gotcha.
Kind of thing. And so that's one of those really obscure ones. I will say, a tough thing, it took me just 2 years. I actually just completed, I'm hoping it actually should arrive in the mail today, is the Marac part for the HBS Kickstarter, all the items.
Okay.
You know, the banners, the hat, keychain, dog tags. It took me 2 years to run down all the Kickstarter stuff. And you wouldn't, you wouldn't think there's that terrible much. But when you throw in the beer signs and the, the jackets, I've been able to track down both of the jackets. One of them, the light gray one's not in my size, unfortunately, but if later on we talk about the museum idea, that was more to get that just for that purpose. But when this package arrives today, it will actually be, I'll at that point have every single thing that was made for the Kickstarter, the extras for the HBS.
Yeah. Yeah. And it kind of makes me weep for your wallet to think about your need to get all the recent Kickstarter swag.
let's just say the recent Kickstarter, I'm fortunate in my, with doing all the stuff on the side and the flipping and moving others' collections and all that kind of stuff. I've been fortunate in some ways there. So my wife kind of leaves me alone in the basement to kind of do my thing. But for the collecting aspect of it, I was like, oh man, the coins, they're double sided. How am I going to show both sides? I have to have two sets of them suckers. And so it became one of those. And then even just in the works, like I had somebody, you're talking about the card game, the overtime?
Double overtime.
Yeah. The double overtime card. So I found somebody that happened to have a couple of them. So I did a trade where they're getting certain things from the Kickstarter in trade for the card. And they've already shipped me the card. So it's in the collection, but I'm waiting for the Kickstarter to come in so I can send them their half of the trade. But I was like, yeah, let's throw that into there and throw it in the mix. And then, other things here and there. But yeah, let's just say I'm a significant contributor to the plan.
So all these new plastic miniatures that they're producing. Awesome. I definitely kind of, kept clicking up and up and got to the point where, fortunately, if you're savvy enough, you can, like you said, you can flip those collections, without, getting too much, even the price gouging. Cause I think that the key is if you buy it in bulk, people will sell it for cheap. And then you do the work to sell it individually. And, it kind of, for me, it's, I have to do that to pay for my, I can't, it's gotta be a zero line item on my budget, the BattleTech. And so it's like, I gotta sell something to buy something. But
well, that's kind of actually where I've gotten, fortunately, with what I'm doing collection wise now. Mm-hmm. If I work out something with somebody and buying in bulk, usually there's at least one or two things in there that I've never seen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I don't have in the collection. And so I'm like, well, I can add that and then I'll flip the rest. And then that basically pays for what I add to my collection outside of picking it up off the group, whether it be eBay or, trades or working with different people overseas. And, I've done some stuff with some connections, Daniel in Spain, where I trade him novels in English and he trades me novels in Spanish.
Oh, perfect.
Yep. And we just each pay our own shipping back and forth, that kind of thing. But so that's a way of adding it to the, getting it and adding it to the collection. I will say, we're talking about one thing, those obscure things. I will say off the last collection where I went to Wisconsin and got it, there were resin jump ships and drop ships in there that Ralph Hartha had made. And I can pull some here in a little bit and show you. But they only made it for Gen Con that 1 year. They were trying it out to see, and they determined that they were too fragile to manufacture. So they
never made the blue resin, the blue resin ones.
Oh, no, these are, okay. Yeah, these are like what you would think of the resin almost for some of the drop ships and stuff like that. But I guess they've kind of tweaked the molds and the design and all that with Ironwind and everybody else.
Yeah.
And just the materials and stuff. If you kind of, it's almost along the lines of like the armor cast Mad Cats and some of those, it looks a little bit like that. But they only made them that one year. This guy happened to just come by and pick up a bunch of each and reaching out to other people. Nobody else had seen them. And I actually even reached out to a connection for Ralpartha Europe. And he's like, yeah, I heard about them, but we never saw them. But we did know that they existed at one point. They just said that they were too fragile and that was the end of it. And so this guy happened to just have some because he's never missed a Gen Con.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those, you know, pretty cool little nuance things. I was going to show you. I went and grabbed them since we had some time. I don't know how well they're going to show up.
Oh, wow. Leopard. Yeah, yeah.
And then there was an Overlord.
Awesome.
And not really sure. And they had this rounder top one. But the Krem would be, and they came on, they had bases.
Ooh.
And then you, and then they even have like little pieces that connect in like here.
Yeah, yeah.
That are all separate all the way around.
Awesome.
And then they came with these big, huge, gigantic fat bases.
Wow. That's awesome. So, are they in scale to each other? Like the drop ships are in scale to the jump ship?
I mean, if you hold up, maybe, I don't know, it'd be pretty.
A little big. Yeah. Could work.
I'm thinking probably merchant class drop ship. I mean, jump ship is what they were going for. Gotcha. So, I mean, it might be pretty close. Not really sure. Leopard.
Yeah, yeah, that could work.
Yeah, but, you know, ultimately, it's pretty neat stuff. I ended up with two of the jump ships and four leopards and then two of each of the larger ones. So
sweet.
Yeah. But like people, I said, you know, nobody even – and the resin on them, the quality is not that great. It's just one of those things that – yes, it was made, but nobody's ever else has ever seen it.
So, nobody was going to pay for it 35 years ago, but today people pay plenty for it. Awesome.
So,
well, you'd mentioned the museum. Yeah, let's dive into that. You know, because I know I had seen it on a comment. I think on one of the pages. So tell us what your thoughts are, your plans are for that.
Yeah. So going back, so for the museum, I just. Again, way back when I was a gamer and played it for fun and didn't know metal miniatures existed, didn't know everything else. I had second edition box set with my standees and basically stood in for everything.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, when everybody converted their own mechs and made their own stuff and did the heck out of that, making our own mechs and playing that kind of stuff and just using the standees to fill in. Did many a fight, but I had all the novels, all the TROs, all the source books, that kind of stuff, and had that for a long time. And then one of those things where life happens and hit a point in my life where I was going through a divorce and had to sell everything off. And, you know, in some ways, hindsight, it is better because I sold it all off and then had the opportunity about 4 years ago, saw the old CGL 3500B on eBay and kept seeing they were way expensive. And I'm like, man, do I get back into this? Do I get back into it? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to dive back in. I love Battletech. It was always my favorite. It had always been my favorite. And so, like, yeah, I'll go ahead and get the box set. Happened to catch a good deal on one and got it. And I'm glad I got the B version.
Yeah.
With definitely. The better miniatures to start with after seeing 35,000 and then 35,000A, whatever, you know, waiting number, it's crazy. But I started getting back into it and I started picking up a couple things here and there. And I was like, you know, I just don't have the time to game as much as I do. I want to get into the collecting aspect. I want to do it for collection. Having no idea that this was not a rabbit hole. This is a black hole.
Oh, yeah.
Diving in with both feet. And, you know, and at one point I was like, oh, I'm never going to get the dice. And now my dice collection is crazy. I'm never going to do that. And I will say I've held off of the clicks and for the collectible card. The only thing I have for that is I buy them when I can just get the whole set all at once or the sealed box. But so going through with the collecting and all that kind of stuff, about a year and a half ago, I was like, as much stuff as I've started collecting and as much stuff is out there and picking it all up, it's kind of morphed into a dream of and a hope and potential to open a BattleTech museum. And so looking at where I'm at in my life, I'll be able to retire from work in about 7 years, it looks like. I'll have my 30 years in as an educator and principal with our state, and we've got a pretty good retirement system, and be able to walk before the age of 55 and do what I want to do. And so I'm like, you know, having a museum and something connected to it is going to be what I'm going to do. And so at this point now, it's a matter of acquiring as many items as I can, just to have the variety and all that, so that when I open it, it'll be something worth showing and worth having, and, you know, and picking up those rarities and wheeling and dealing when I see some stuff to try to get some things. And so definitely it's become kind of a passion at this point to do that. So the museum will have to be in North Carolina, guys. Unfortunately, my youngest daughter will be in middle school at that point. So the chances of getting my wife out of North Carolina is going to be slim to none. So it will be located somewhere on the East Coast in North Carolina.
North Carolina's a beautiful state. There's better places. There's worse places to be. Yeah, there'll be. I know people talk on the pages about they're kind of like traveling to Mecca, going to Iron Ones Metals and getting all their metal miniatures. So you'll be like the other Mecca for BattleTech fans to kind of travel, get a little North Carolina vacation.
I'm already working some people over to like, okay, you're gonna have to come down and visit. You're gonna have to help this. You're gonna have to help that. So
awesome. Yeah. Very cool. So what are some of the kind of, grail items that are still, being sought there for you? Kind of what's next on your list?
Well, as I mentioned, the Oval Battle Droid Marauder in Blister is the big one. I actually have been able to acquire all the other Battle Droid, mechs in Blister and open. But that one Blister is something I'm definitely after. The, there's, I guess some of the foreign items, like finding some of the box sets in, I still want to get a couple more of the Japanese box sets that are really hard, like the City Tech. For whatever reason, the Japanese City Tech, not even sealed, it's like over 200. Wow. And I'm like, I don't know that I can bring myself to that point yet.
Yeah.
I've been fortunate. I was able to get the sealed Battle Droids box set, the actual just the standard box. So
awesome.
I've got an open version of that and the sealed, but that's probably the most expensive thing in the collection if somebody were to just, appraise it or go off for that type of thing.
Yeah.
I'm trying to pick up there's some different artwork items, and I've got a friend that I've picked up things from before that we're talking now. He's got from map set 1 and 2, the original map designs before the hex maps, before they had hexes on them.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the original prints as they were designing it out. So I'm trying to work on getting those.
Yeah. I'm excited for all the new designs that are coming out through the Kickstarter. Those, I love the updates that they've been doing with the design process, cause I love talking about the process of making stuff. And so there's pretty awesome. I love what they've been doing there.
Yeah, just some of the steps that they went through to get, and if you think about the actual amount of stuff that is out there from the 80s and the 90s and the Fan Pro era and the CGL era, I mean, how much of that stuff was made and never made it in a book or, never got it?
Oh, man, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much. Or if it was, you get these super elaborate pieces of artwork that are just beautiful. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's for such and such magazine on one page, and it's not even, it's like I was able to just pick up one piece, and it's like the side art takes up a whole page, but it's the side art for a Stardate magazine.
Mm-hmm.
It's some obscure piece, and those kind of things are what, it gets kind of crazy, and it's beautiful. I mean, there's some amazing stuff out there.
Yeah.
And it's just like, how many people have all these other things that I don't have and I don't know about? And right. They need to talk.
they can bequeath it to the BattleTech Museum, you know, upon their passing, and yep. hopefully you outlast them so you can enjoy it too.
Yeah, I see some of that and get it in there. Yeah, it's gonna be like the intentions. It'll be like any museum. It'll be a nonprofit type of thing. I mean, part of it's a labor of love, so it's gonna be. Obviously, I'm gonna have to find some ways to support it.
Yeah.
And whether it be hook it to a game store on the side, or I start taking on a second career, and you know, it'll be open on certain hours when I can be there.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's just some different aspects and some things that'll have to be worked out as we get down the line. But you know, I'll be young enough and able to have a second career. Obviously, as an educator, retiring doesn't mean I'm gonna be set for life, but
yeah, definitely.
But it'll be fun, and you know, it'll be exciting to make sure that there's game tables in there. People can, dice while we're talking some history.
Yeah. I mean, that was my thought, just, you know, tied into a game table. And actually, I'd gone to a tournament for X-Wing when I was playing X-Wing a couple of years ago. There was a tournament, a regional tournament down in New York City. And it was this awesome little setup. It was like a house in a neighborhood. And they had basically gutted out this house and turned it into like a gaming club. And mm-hmm. So it's just in the neighborhood, and, you know, it's kind of, there were tables set up, you know, I think there were two different stories. There was a little store in the front and then the kind of gaming club, and people basically kind of paid a membership, you know, to have access to the club. They could get in whenever they needed to. That was probably one of the coolest little store ideas that I'd seen kind of in my gaming travels. But yeah, there's definitely always that you can kind of combine that with a little North Carolina gaming club and a little storefront in the front and then the museum in the back. I think you'd do all right.
Yep.
It'd be good. And then especially if you add in a little online option to that, then
yeah, and my wife will love getting it out of the house.
There you go. Well, what you want that basement for? You know, what else would it be used if it wasn't for? Yeah,
well, you know, she actually, I'm fortunate with my wife. She hates coming down to the basement. So it's, we're actually in the process of remodeling it, because I'm down here all the time between working on the collection or, you know, selling the stuff on buy, sell, trade and, mm-hmm. and all that. I put my little one to bed and I'm down here for 4 or 5 hours doing different stuff and working on stuff. And so, part of it will be to remodel it and to get until the museum is open to be able to set stuff up and use it as a showroom, just to, you know, have people be able to see the collection.
Let's see some of stuff.
The one that I'm talking about is truly.
Ooh, very cool. Awesome.
But that's the one that's got all the planets.
Yeah.
Almost all the planets of the inner sphere. And it breaks it down most of them. It goes by like sector. It talks about, you know, the sun on it. It gives a little description for it. I mean, it's like crazy, but it's like one of those, how could they not have done that in English?
Yeah.
There's Google Translate now, man.
It's either time or legal. You know, it's gotta be one of those two things that's holding them back.
Well,
it's
probably
time and manpower.
I think that one was done by FanPro. Yeah. See, it was FanPro, but that's when FanPro over in Germany, they just weren't making stuff in English.
Yeah.
There was all that extra stuff. Kind of like, I get across the pond. Mm-hmm. You know, they're like, well, hey, all they ever do is make things for the U.S.
Okay.
In English,
fair.
Not for the rest of the world.
Well, give us a little tour of the room there while you're in there.
Oh, it's a hot mess for some of it. So.
Oh, nobody cares. You know, my game room is pretty bad.
All right. So, paints and.
Cool.
There's one. So actually, I have three of the black jackets.
Okay.
All my sides, because some of them I can't wear.
Excellent.
That's let's see. We'll go down low. So those are all my miniatures that are out of blisters, all in the cases, battle droids, all that kind of jazz. And then you were talking about having the box sets, mm-hmm. all sealed. Very cool.
Yep.
They're over here. The 8 of those and all that kind of stuff. That's all my international goodies so far. Then there's all the different magazines and TROs and stuff like that. And then I have over here on this side.
Oh, nice. I got the toys.
All the Tyco. I've been able to get all of them sealed, all the sets. And then there's Kinects. I'm missing just a couple of Kinects because there's more over there. Joy Rides, Kinects together, all that stuff. And then this is some of my second sets. These are my actual play sets that I use when gaming. Play sets or extra books, double books, all that kind of jazz. And then, let's see, did you get the HBS soundtrack? You know, there's a soundtrack for that. It's on LP.
I didn't know that.
You know, there's an LP, but, and then there's, unfortunately, hold on, let me flip this light off. I'll take some of the glare out. So there's patches. I'm going to step back a little bit and get a better shot of. Most of the patches I've gotten, I also have sealed sets of all the FASA ones. And then there's pins that I'm working on. And then, like I said, way too many dice.
Yeah.
working on that kind of stuff. And then I had sent you the pictures, but I have all the box sets sealed. And this one cabinet, other than the TROs that are in the closet because they don't fit on that shelf, but this one cabinet here has every single box set and source book made by FASA, FanPro, and CGL.
Wow. Very cool.
So, and then I keep all the novels and the computer games on the other side. Then there's all the old audio tapes.
Were you able to snag some of the signed copies that Michael was doing for the Charette collection?
Yeah, some of the miniature, the blisters.
Yeah, and I got the novels. Wolves on the Boar is my favorite. I got that. I didn't get the Heir to the Dragon, the original Heir to the Dragon sign, but.
So all of the ones at the very, very top up here are all autographed.
Awesome.
Novels. But if you want to get with Michael, he's going to go see him in a few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Send him, if you already have the novels, send them to him and he'll get them autographed for you.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
Just, especially because y'all did that the podcast before.
Oh, yeah. Michael, I've been geeking out back and forth ever since then.
Yeah. So just talk to him and be like, hey, can you do me a huge favor? I know you're going to be going there in a little bit. Can you
definitely
hook me up with getting them signed? And I bet he can do it with no problem.
Awesome. Well, thanks for that tour.
Well, I know it's a hot mess trying to walk around and look through everything and this and that. And, I would say probably the other rarest thing that's in the collection when I sent you a picture of was the number 12 box set from TCI, the one that's the drop ship.
I missed that one, yeah. I got the Battle Droids one that you sent me, and then I got... the branding for the anime game, which is a really cool piece. I know you'd kind of, we kind of brushed past that earlier, but I think you had included pictures of that on one of the Facebook groups when you picked it up.
Yeah.
And it was super cool just to kind of see, all the basically specs and branding. Oh, nice.
So this thing, I happen to have a sealed version of that, but that sealed one, I don't know if anybody else that has a sealed one. I'm sure they're out there.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's because those kits were going to be the original Battle Droid models.
Okay.
Those plastics at the 140. That's what Battle Droid was supposed to be.
Right. And the original Battle Droid came with what, two of those plastic models?
Two plastic, yep.
Yeah.
Shadowhawk and I want Griffin, but I can't remember right now off the top of my head. But definitely the Shadowhawk was one of them. And so they had the 12 kits, and 1 through 11 had two models in them each. And then number 12 was supposed to be the dropship, which is, they use the old Minerva.
Mm-hmm.
but from Crusher Joe, it's the Minerva ship. Mm-hmm. But it is canon. If you read up on the Leopard on Sarna, it's a Leopard B conversion that only carried two mechs and was used by House Davion for secret missions and all this other kind of stuff. So that was their way of getting away with it.
Well, they do great things of making things canon. I think I mentioned this in an earlier podcast, but their canonization of the animated series is just a true stroke of genius. Whoever came up with that idea needs to get a raise, because that is amazing what they seamlessly folded that in there. I mean, how perfect was that? That was awesome.
Well, I think that goes to some of that originality that in the broad strokes, and then just taking different ideas from different people and just running with it, you know, like, hey, how do we make this work? You know?
Yeah.
And I think their way of making the Dark Age work is that they just accept it happened and let's move on and let's talk about it as little as possible.
Yep.
And let's get past it far enough. You know, I think we're pushing things along now. Let's get past it far enough that it's just
a minute non-issue
history, and it's a non-issue. Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, it is what it is. All these people died, unfortunately, and they wiped out all these characters. And I know Blaine can't stand it. A lot of us can't. But, you know, we just move on.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, you know, we start in 3025. We know about what's happening around, you know, the year 3000 with Wolf's Dragoons coming in. But nobody thinks or talks about what was happening in the 2900s, you know. So, you know, it's very easy for us to just kind of be like, oh, don't worry. You know, don't look behind the curtain of what happened, you know, 50 years ago or 70 years ago. So it's easy to do.
And I think it comes down to, you got people in the 3025 era. You got people in the 3050 era. There's a few in the Word of Blake, all that stuff before the Dark Ages. And then now you've got everybody kind of stepping into 3145, 3150. And, mm-hmm. You know, I keep waiting for them to say how much significance there is in the fact that it's 100 years later that when they invade the Inner Sphere and they're going to take Terra. It's like, okay, exactly 100 years? Come on. The point is, why are we making this at the century mark?
Yeah, we'll find out.
I keep waiting for that little ball to drop it, you know, in some significant fashion, or whoever, or whatever, why, and all that. But they haven't done yet.
We'll find out soon. Within the next year, Blaine was indicating it'll be soon, so I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm they're prepping for it. They're coming out. They're rolling those novels out right now, left and right.
Which is awesome.
And that's fun too. I mean, it's exciting. Let's get it out there. Let's see what happens. And you know, if we can keep them in the top 10 for science fiction stuff, people will be like, why does Battletech keep coming up every time I'm doing a search on Amazon or whatever? And those are the kind of things that make a difference. So,
yeah.
It's funny, a couple of the guys in our gaming group now, because we do play tabletop here about once a month, and we play at my house. Because not only do I have a crap load of everything else, but I've also got a ton of terrain. And
and
I will say, I was an old 40K and fantasy GW guy there in between my Battletech years. And other than the paints, I don't have much of anything to do with them anymore. Nothing against them. I was an outrider for it. And loyal to them for a long time, and things just fantasy kind of turned me off Age of Sigmar, but there's some guys that love it. But that was part of what brought me back to Battletech, though, was just that I had that empty feeling, like I poured so much into it. It's kind of, you know, it kind of felt like it was taken away from me, and I felt like the Battletech, I could go back. It was still going on. There's still all this history. They're moving it forward with the fiction. Mm-hmm. And the writings and the source books and just pushing it all. And so,
That's, you know, the one of the things that I find, you know, in terms of the gaming community, it's just what Battletech has done right through all of its owners, its IP owners, which is even more impressive that it's gone through so many different kind of, you know, rounds of leadership, is that it's always built off of itself. You know, it's never been like everything you have is obsolete and you got to start over, you know. And certainly that's, you know, I haven't played Warhammer, but I know that that's what a lot of people complain about is just, you know, they spend thousands of dollars on the collection, then it just gets wiped out with a rule book or even X-Wing. When I was playing X-Wing, I was excited to get second edition when it was released, but it essentially had me start out at zero, and I just didn't have the time in my life to keep up to the point. You know, and I was fairly competitive in first edition and stayed there at the beginning of second, but it was too much. And Battletech is just, you know, it's so modular. You know, it's like you can play anytime, you know. And for me, I play mainly 3025, you know, and a little 3050, not because I don't like the other airs, just because for me the game experience is centered in the lore in the novels, and those the novels that I read as a teenager, and I haven't caught back up to where I was as a teenager to kind of expand past that. And there's is totally no problem doing that. You know, you can kind of game there, you can kind of game in the 3145, and yeah, they've done nothing to make previous investments obsolete, which is to their credit, you know, and I think that's why they have such loyalty within the fan base, you know, that and just the amazing lore, you know, which has been key for me for sure.
I completely agree with you know, with the fan base and keeping it that way, you know, the BV values and all that kind of stuff. If all I've got is my mechs from 3025 and I want to play against you running, you know, something else, we can balance it out. There's ways around it. And you know, it's never a perfect world, but at least it's close and we can kind of make some stuff happen. And I do feel that that's an important part of the game and how they've, you know, there's always stuff that's going to turn people away, but they've tried to keep it loyal. Obviously, you know, Dark Age is a little bit different. I've got all the novels sitting here behind me, and I'll be the first to say I haven't read any of the Dark Ages.
Yeah.
I got past FedCom Civil War and then break. I haven't read any of the Dark Ages stuff, and I picked up all the new stuff and been reading all the new stuff. And
yeah,
that's just kind of, you know, where I was at. And that's also for me coming back into it at a later time. I will say I missed the whole fan pro era for the most part, a good portion of all that. And so, which is probably why I just haven't gotten into the click
right
stuff with WizKids and all that right now, is I just don't, it's not a huge part for me yet. I mean, obviously when I'm sitting there thinking in the grand scheme of collecting, I'm not looking for it.
Yeah.
So having to figure out how to add all that to the collection at some point, you know, if I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it right, I've got to have all that as well. And it's just like, oh, that's just,
yeah,
there's one more thing that's daunting. Let me focus on all these other things. And eventually I'll get around to that one.
So. Right. Yeah, I've heard that stuff can command a decent little tag on eBay. That the way to go is buying in bulk. I know when I was talking to Michael Todd on our earlier podcast, that he was talking about kind of picking up, and he basically had to buy them by the pound. You know, the clicks by the pound to get kind of good price, and then just kind of get what you can out of there. But yeah, I haven't even kind of seen it myself. I kind of followed a similar. I think I came to it later. It was about 2 years ago, which I picked it back up. I mean, it was a core part of my teenage years. I remember I was reading the novels, you know, like crazy through middle school and early high school. And I remember my English teacher saying, "Travis, I need you to do a book report on something else, you know, this week." You know? And I was like, "Well, that's all I'm reading. You know, I've read, you know, reading straight through." But when I picked it back up about 2 years ago, and then all my original stuff, it survived, you know, survived all the mini moves and kept it there because you know, it was always there. And so it's been a ton of fun, and unfortunately being kind of eBay savvy has kept the expense down, you know, for doing it. But yeah, I'm excited to see what they come out when the Kickstarter drops. But it'll be good.
Yeah, I'll be interested in the new, what, you know, even after the Kickstarter, obviously, you know, we're all waiting for Kickstarter, wave one, wave two, and all that kind of stuff. I'm just really interested in the future with what the company is going to do and how they're going to move forward, and mm-hmm. and how do we take this great fan base. And, you know, granted, there's however many thousand people that contributed to Kickstarter, and I don't remember the numbers off the top of my head for that. I know dollar-wise, I don't remember the actual number of people that contributed, but you know, when you look at that, I'm really hoping that they're able to take that, you know, and you hear people talk about, oh, look, you know, the box set, it was in Barnes and Noble, and you know, and X-Wing is in Barnes and Noble, mm-hmm. and so, you know, maybe that does pick up a few people here and there, and And there's been a lot of, you know, it's interesting. Just this past week, was added as a moderator for the buy sell trade, and how many people like being to hop in and be like, hey, I want to buy stuff. That's one of the questions they have to say, what are you going to do? Buy, sell, trade. And they're like, oh, I want to buy stuff. I want to do this. And I think as people getting back into it, like just out of the blue, like I had a guy probably 3 weeks ago from Brazil. He's like, hey, I'm interested in some stuff. And, you know, we worked out and I shipped him a whole bunch of stuff. And he's like, yeah, I'm just getting into it, you know, and jumping kind of all over it and stuff. And he's like, I'm not even sure everything I need, but I want to get it all. And
yeah,
we talked about, well, hey, next round two, you let me know. I know there's some stuff printed in Portuguese that's down there in Brazil that I would love to add. We can work out some trading. So, awesome. You know, and I will say the biggest thing, you know, after all my GW years and all that other kind of stuff, and I made a ton of friends in North Carolina and stuff. But I would say with BattleTech, it's been being able to build friendships in the community on a worldwide scale. Mm. Like I'm talking to, you know, I talk to people in Japan and Canada and Germany and Singapore and Australia and just all the time, Spain. And, you know, I've got really good links and connections and talking to people and like, hey, you know, how's your family? And, oh, hey, I hate to hear, you know, this going on. And, you know, when there was all the Australian fires, I was checking on those guys, you know, how's it going? Or, you know, and they're checking on us here and all that kind of stuff. And that community, I think that sense of community has been huge. And that's a big part of it for me too. I feel like, you know, I'm in it with a good group of people, just sometimes sitting back and, you know, shooting the crap and just having conversations and talking.
Yeah.
And obviously it's, you know, it's messaging and Facebook messaging and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, I feel like I built some really good friendships with some guys in Canada and Minneapolis. And, you know, I've only met one of those other guys, not in my actual North Carolina community. Mm-hmm. Only met one, and that happened to be on my Wisconsin trip, but and that Dave out in Indiana. But, you know, it's, I think that's important.
Yeah, definitely. And I've noticed it too. And, you know, I've been, you know, with this COVID and a little bit before, I've been kind of producing some content. You know, for me, my profession is in athletics as a coach and nonprofit administrator. And yeah, just the degree of kind of warmth and communication coming from kind of just this hobby channel that I started out on the side to have fun is just, you know, so much more than, you know, it is kind of in that athletic community, you know, with the content, which is, you know, arguably far more valuable to kind of develop people's health and fitness without injuring them. But yeah, it's been awesome. It's been a ton of fun for the people kind of interacting there. And, yeah, so I empathize, you know, with that. It's been good to kind of, it's kind of like that, you know, that old high school friend you reconnect with, right? You know, the kind of, you know, part of you when you're, you know, your personality is forming and you kind of get back there. And, you know, I look back and the novels and kind of, just kind of how formative they were and just in terms of, you know, understanding of, you know, honor and duty and kind of how that kind of translated to my personal life and how I conduct myself. And it's been fun going back and rereading and I'm super excited. I have a conversation with Robert Charette next week. And so I'm kind of, you know, I don't usually fanboy out, but I'm pretty excited about that conversation and hopefully I'll snag Michael Stackpole, you know, get his attention if he's interested at some point. That would be awesome too. But yeah, it's been fun for sure. You were talking about that art. I've been, you know, I'm a huge fan of just kind of exploring various BattleTech arts. You know, is there some pieces that you have that kind of stand out that are your favorites? Or even artists, you know, kind of, you know, one thing I love is, you know, the old art was very, you know, the old artists were all fantasy artists. You know, you look them up now, they kind of were all like, you know, guys like Boris Vallejo and Jim Holloway and stuff like that. And I love it. And I picked up Eldon Calger's, you know, illustrations for that Text Talks on the Mackie, where it was like just a lot more kind of atmosphere and flavor to it than kind of just like some, you know, a lot of awesome mech, you know, pictures. But I like just kind of there's a little story behind it. So, you know, any kind of fun pieces in the collection that, you know, you kind of share with us?
you know, I don't necessarily think I have any artwork that's above and beyond right now what anybody else has. The only thing that I have that's in some ways, I guess, artwork related that would step out is I was able to get a hold of the book for the actually when they made the cartoon that gave them their guides for everything, as cheesy as the cartoon was.
Yeah.
But gave them like their height guide and the color range, the color guide and for everything that went into it. And so if you're thinking about it in an artwork sense about how, you know, they made all the different episodes and how everything is going to have to match. That part of it's been kind of interesting. I've got several pieces from Anthony that I've been able to throw up on the wall. And I'll be part of my problem right now is even with being in the basement, I don't have a place to put everything.
Yeah.
And so, like, I think I have pretty much every poster FASA ever made, but they are all stacked away. Some are in frames and some are rolled and they're all put away in my, I have a basement down here in the bathroom down here in the basement that my wife doesn't like going into because it's got the folded version of the blueprints all up on the wall in the bathroom. And, you know, just as a joke kind of thing. And so when you think about that, but it's just been, I guess, finding some of those pieces, just any and all of it. I will say that the artwork is, for me as a collector, when I can pick up all these different pieces, the value of artwork is expensive in the grand scheme of the things that I'm trying to pick up and how much is out there. And so I will be the first to say that I haven't been able to jump into the artwork. Like if I see a piece, I'm like, oh man, that's beautiful. Let me get that, you know. And unfortunately, Noble Knights Games has got a million pieces up for sale.
Yeah.
But it's just way too expensive to be able to get all of that and roll it in. And so, you know, the posters, I knew that's going to be something that I could get a hold of. And then when you start getting into people's individual work, though, there's a ton of value in that.
And I wish the artists sold more prints. And that was one of the things that I loved when I found Eldon's work, when he put up for that text talks on the Mackie, is that he had a website where he was selling prints, you know, and even Star Wars, actually kind of the first Star Wars, my first art that I put up on my wall was a Star Wars print that I found. And I'll kind of throw a little picture here. People can check it out. But there's so few artists that you can just kind of buy the prints. And I looked up, Boris Vallejo's old, Day of Heroes cover artwork. I love that. And I tried to find, I was like, can I buy a print of this? I would love to frame this. And the closest I got was they made some of those little action cards. I'm sure you've seen them. Yep, exactly. Awesome. Yeah, I've got
all of them.
Awesome. Yeah. Oh, very cool. Yeah, I got the Blood of Heroes one a couple of weeks ago, but one of the guys on Facebook had pinged me that there's an eBay auction up for the whole collection of all the 96 BattleTech and non-BattleTech. So we'll see if I grab that.
Oh, but, well, that's just one that you have to actually. There's two boxes that you have to get them, and then there's one other one that only has the Hatchet Man in it separate.
Okay. So well, good. Well, I got the Hatchet Man, so I just need the rest. So I'm good there. And I got the Hatchman one for like $8, which is it was like amazing. Crazy. It's such a beautiful, and anybody that's watching this, you'll probably clear out eBay. It's like, you know, $8 or $10 and it's an awesome little trading card, gloss, you know, little finish. So
yeah, I happened to run across, from,
Assumption Risk. Yeah.
Yeah. But whoever happened to have it for sale, they ended up having like six of them all together. And I was And that's actually what got me started on, like, hey, wait a minute, those are out there? Let me go start doing a little bit more search. And, Stephen Strangeway, he's up in Canada,
he's the one that picked me
on
it.
All the rest, and he actually did all the work. He's like, okay, you can get this one, and this one, and this one, and this one, and this box set, and these four, and this one, and you got to go through this, and here's a good deal. And I think he was having more fun messaging me, but it was like, time-wise, I think I was like at 11 o'clock at night, and he's like blowing my phone up with like, hey, here's another one, and sending me the links, and I'm like, oh, you're killing me, I can't keep up, and I'm getting tired.
That's funny. Awesome. But yeah, I wish, I don't know if there's restrictions on some of the artists, like, you know, either if it's Anthony or Florian or any of those other artists or Alex, if they can sell prints. But, you know, if they're listening and you're allowed to, there's no legal restrictions, you know, sell prints on your website. You know, I think people will buy them, but I'd definitely be interested in some of them. I have similar space issues. I don't know if you can see kind of like up in the corner of my video here, the slanted walls. And so, you know, there's slanted walls up in my, I'm on the third floor is my kind of game room. And, the slanted walls, I bemoan it with my girlfriend. I was like, they kill in the wall space. You know, I can't use that wall. Yeah. At an angle. Right. So what I want to do is, you know, if I can get like make a little studio up here to kind of shoot these videos for Renegade HBG, and I'll just kind of have like my stack of artworks like leaning against the wall, and I'll just kind of like switch a new frame with a different art, you know, for different videos.
I talked to some other guys about we need to just get like from Walmart, get the poster rack, and just, you know, flip them back and forth and be like, yeah. Oh, here we go, and you know, put it in the corner and have at it. One of the things I've done with remodeling is actually I have a hallway. As I was saying, I've got these two, there's like a hallway as you're entering into the basement from the stairs coming down. I've got about 15, 17 feet on each side, just solid plain white walls, nice and bright, put in a new light in there, new flooring. I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna fill it up with a collage. It's going to be a whole wall collage of Battletech art. And I'm like, yeah. I'm like, really? Look, I got 30 feet of wall space that I could just fill up. And she's like, no. I'm like, okay, what if I do it? So if you're at the stairs and you're looking, you can't see down the hallway and I have all the rest of it. And she's like, if I can't see it, I don't care. I'm like, all right.
Perfect.
That gives me a whole 15 foot on one side and gives me about 10 foot on the other. So,
it's like, so you're right. Saying there's a chance.
Yeah. So there's definitely a chance. So,
awesome.
So yeah. So then I'm like, oh, now I'm going to have to start getting this stuff framed professionally and do a little bit better job with some of it. So I can start throwing it up there. But yeah.
Well, that Walmart swivel poster thing is a great idea for the museum. You know, if you're tight on space there.
Yeah. You're going to, you'd almost have to, you know, that, or you're going to have to find a warehouse with 40 foot tall ceilings.
Yeah.
I mean, as much stuff is out there, especially posters, and then you start getting into the banners and, you know, like the HBS banners, and those aren't anything small. And there's, you know, and like I've been going around picking up some of the advert prints that they had, you know, the original Battle Droids advert print that was in a magazine. But, you know, those, and I've got some for the games, like MechWarrior, MechWarrior 2, Mech Commander, those kind of things. And so, you know, those things started adding up.
Yeah. Oh, man, I have fond memories of spending many hours playing MechWarrior 2. And the soundtrack is amazing. I use the soundtrack kind of on the end credits for all my videos here. It's yeah. Awesome. That one, and then Timothy Seals did a little remake of the soundtrack, which is also really awesome that I use sometimes, but yeah, I found my old MechWarrior 2 CD kind of in a box, you know, earlier this year, and I remember that it's also a soundtrack CD, and I plugged it in and immediately like ripped all the tracks and put it on my computer and listened to it. It was a good trip down memory lane. What a great soundtrack that was. But yeah, the video games are a very dangerous rabbit hole for me that I kind of divorced myself from in my kind of, I think, junior year of high school. And so I haven't played any of the new, I haven't played HBS Battletech. I haven't played, you know, the new MechWarriors, not for a lack of desire, but for a simple knowledge of myself. And that would be a bad idea for my productivity in the professional life. So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So we always set those aside. Yeah. Yeah.
Evaporate.
Well, when you're gaming, kind of where are you sticking? What kind of errors are you sticking around for your gaming? Or do you kind of do long campaigns, or you kind of do one-off stuff with your buds?
So we do a little bit of all of it. We were we actually had our group, and we were doing a campaign. We were tying it in from like 3048, flowing into getting ready to get into 3050,
mm-hmm.
And we had our. We have a group, and it's kind of funny because I grew up in Florida, but I have a buddy, so we grew up together playing Battletech and whatever. And as crazy as it is, we both ended up here in North Carolina and right now live 20 minutes from each other. Oh, and so yeah, so we broke out, like, we were like, okay, well, let's get back into it. And then I had met a guy who was a manager at a hobby town. And so we became friends, and that was back in my GW days, but he's a BattleTech player. And so we started up, and then another guy, I don't even remember. I think he went to buy something from me off of Buy Sell Trade. And we got talking, and he happened to live in the same town as my other friend from Florida. And so I'm like, well, you're right around the corner. So we actually started doing a campaign, 3048, and we're getting into 3049 and all that. And then just some things with life happened for all of us, and we took a little hiatus. And in the meantime, had another guy, Kev Whalen, who's big into Wolfnet, and he's 20 minutes from me as well. And so he started gaming with us. So then we started doing more one-offs. And what we actually started doing is we became, on Wolfnet, the one group, the one lance that fought all of our battles tabletop. So all the different missions that they would assign out, I'd be like, okay, you'd assign it to the company, but our lance is going to fight it by ourselves. And so here as well.
Now, what are the tournaments like? I've never made it to a BattleTech tournament. You know, how's that play out?
Well, I've only been to the one. So they did it like a Swiss. So everybody had, it was 30, 25 RMX. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you had a lance, certain BV value, you couldn't have doubles. That kind of stuff. I didn't do very good. You just forget how much of a pounding stuff can take, and you know, and you're trying to run this or that, and you know, it was fun. Yeah. What can I say? You know, there was points for painting and this and that, and there was six of us, I think, that maybe showed up, six or eight of us. So it was just good to get out and play and have a good time. Definitely a little bit different than I guess from what I expected versus how I definitely played in the tournament different than how I would normally play here at the house.
So
just getting in the game. I don't know why. I don't know if it was just like, oh, I need to try something different or, and I just got out of my groove. Cause I think you're just trying to do things a little bit different when you're around people you don't know.
Gotcha.
Who knows? I don't know.
Well, I found it's, you know, on that competitive side, you know, things change when you kind of get outside your own little, you know, little gaming sphere and you go and how other people are thinking and you're just like, you know, I think it's Mike Tyson's quote, you know, everyone has a plan until you get hit, you know, and when you go out there, I remember, you know, certainly playing X-Wing and then going out into the scene and just being like, whoa, got dead last in my first tournament just because I thought I had it figured out, and I get there and all of a sudden people got it figured out way more than you.
Right. Everybody knows what you're going to do plus, five things.
Exactly.
But I will say that I think that's another thing with BattleTech is because there's not as much of a tournament scene. You know, I will say in my 40K years, I mean, I remember when I first got into North Carolina and I was doing all that, I literally at one point in my life played 5 tournaments in 7 weekends. And I did very well. I was a good player for that, you know, and the game morphed and all that kind of stuff. And it was fine. But it became too competitive. It was like bloodthirsty. It was like, oh, we've got to win. We've got to get the prizes. We've got to do. And so I've always been a firm believer whenever I ran tournaments, I made sure that sportsmanship part was still in there. You got to be a good guy. You can't be a jerk, you know, when you're playing. But I feel in BattleTech, because it's more of a laid back, we're just having fun, you know, you're shooting stuff. Who doesn't love driving around in a giant robot, you know, giant mech robot thing, shooting up stuff and blowing stuff up and getting blown up? It's just a fun aspect that you can have fun with. I mean, I even take, you know, last time we played here at my house, we usually do it early in the morning, like 8 o'clock in the morning, play till about 1 in the afternoon. And we were like, we all got together and we're playing. It was going to be 3 clan on 4 inner sphere. And we're like, oh yeah, we're set to go. And literally turn 2, saw 4 mechs. Boom, 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 boom. All 2 went down to headshots. A third was a critical cockpit kill. And then the fourth was there was a double 1 for the critical center torso. They roll, they get a 12.
Oh, boy.
Two gyros and an engine. And so literally turn 2, 4 out of the 7 mechs fall dead. Boom.
Yeah.
It was just like, and we had more fun with that, trash talking each other, yeah, and joking about it and being like, oh, look at that, you just got smeared in the cockpit and, you know, and all that kind of stuff, than if, you know, it would have been something more formal that we played for 5 hours.
Yeah.
And the game was over in 4 turns. I mean, it's like, awesome. Okay, yeah, we could almost restart this and start over.
And do it again.
Yeah, you know what? Let's just
break for early lunch. Yeah.
Yeah, let's just sit around and we'll just talk and, you know, talk about it. So.
Yeah, I find my Half-Life's about 2.5-3 hours, you know, where it's my sweet spot for a BattleTech game, and so that kind of dictates the size. But, you know, I've definitely been having fun playing more scenarios instead of just, you know, and still instead of just hunt and kill. But yeah, it's been good there. Well, what it kind of, you know, looking forward, you know, with all the Kickstarter stuff, and you're all waiting for kind of this Elcon era, kind of what are you kind of looking forward to? Like, what are some things that you would love to see kind of, you know, BattleTech do or go, you know, to kind of, you know, just kind of take us into that next stage?
I think that BattleTech would do well if they can continue talking and pushing. You know, I know it's all about mechs, I get that, but I think a lot of people are itching for the vehicles in the aerospace. I think they really need to be thinking about that for the future. A lot of people just, they like that aspect of it. And, you know, when you're sitting there talking about, you know, the RCTs and the combined armed force, and you've got total warfare and you've got all these other kind of things, let's get that back into the game. Let's, you know, make it a little bit more a combined arm approach that you hear about and you see about. And I think that's going to be one thing to do. I think that they definitely need to continue the pod aspect of stuff. I think that really helps them as a company.
Mm. What do you mean, like, pods, like the game pods?
The print on demand. Which is,
oh, okay, okay.
Keep doing the print on demand. Yeah, keep doing.
I went back to those old Jordan Weissman's, you know, kind of like, you know, project of love, project of passion.
Yeah, no, not virtual.
Print on demand. Pod, yeah, definitely.
Print on demand. Yeah. Mm. I think that's been a huge aspect, and, you know, and I'll be the first to say it'll kill what I do with the flipping and the resale of stuff. But if they were to eventually start working their way backwards and putting all that old stuff on print on demand, people would love to get it. Cause, you know, there's certain things that, don't get me wrong, I mean, the old house books, the 1620, 1621 house, finer and all that kind of stuff, you're never gonna be able to get those on print on demand. They just won't, they're not going to match up. You basically have to rewrite the book, and it's just not going to happen. But for some of that other stuff, yeah, there's no reason that, and part of it is, you know, to what it cost me to get it. I tried getting it as low as I can and then giving it back out at a fair price and lower than you're ever going to see on eBay or Amazon or anything like that.
Yeah.
But some of those books, you know, they did it with the Succession, you know, First Succession War, Second Succession War.
Yeah. And then they'll get that Starlink Defense Force, which is an amazing, amazing book that they made. So
if they can start doing it with that kind of stuff, War of Reaving, and just all those kind of things, I think it'll help them, especially as you're trying to draw in new people. I don't know if there's a way to, you know, advertise or what. Granted, I know GW is all word of mouth, and I keep bringing them up a lot just because I lived that life for a long time, and it's something that I'm aware of and know. But, you know, their word of mouth kept things going, and I think BattleTech's going to have to get back into a lot of that word of mouth. But, you know, throw a little advertisement here and there. Some new folks.
When the new box set came out, and I kind of approached my local gaming store owner about it, you know, I was just like, you know, asking what his opinion about BattleTech was, and his response was just like, they don't advertise, it's like they don't give us any kind of promo material, whatnot. And so it kind of made me think, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe don't put a lot into it, but you see those giant GW kind of posters and cutouts, you know, standing up there. You know, you get some good artwork on a mech, and you can get a really sharp little, like, store display that you can give to people, and that's going to kind of catch people's attention. Something as simple as that, you know, I think it'd make a big difference for the company. And you know, it's hard to get out of that. Well, we just go by word of mouth, you know.
Well, I know on the new Kickstarter, the merchant packs are going to have, I guess it's a some sort of cardboard cutout, but it's, you know, it's not huge, but it'll go on top of a shelf or on top of a counter. And so I do hope that they maybe they're going to use that and do some more with that kind of stuff. And yeah, throw them, you know, how many of those old posters, like the old Metal Mayhem poster that's out there, you know, that was given to stores all the time just for them to throw up on their wall.
And if they also gotta, you know, kind of get out of that paradigm of the art that they make for the BattleTech universe and realizing that that isn't necessarily going to sell it outside. So, like, you know, I was talking about kind of the original artists in BattleTech, you know, guys like the Jim Holloway, the Boris Vallejo, like those pieces are going to resonate with anybody. They're going to catch their eye because there's like atmosphere to them. Whereas a lot of the pieces are just like, this is a really cool scene of a mech shooting stuff, you know, which is going to appeal to the guys that like mechs. But, you know, it's the posters like the Fox's Teeth poster or the Blood of Heroes type of art, you know, or even the Tales of Black Widow art, like that kind of style. And what Eldon did, you know, with the Mackie art, like that stuff is like, that's what's going to kind of draw in the non-BattleTech people. So if the guys at CGL can separate out and be like, okay, well, you know, we want to get art, but we also got to get art that's a little different than what we're just kind of producing in our textbooks, our you know, technical readouts or our source books. And
right. And like you mentioned, like Fox's Teeth and some of those kind of pieces of art get people asking other questions like, hey, what does that mean? Why is that on there? Or,
yeah.
Other than, yeah. Oh, hey, that's just a cool fight scene.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because I'd post on my, you know, every once in a while on my Instagram or Facebook, I'll kind of post like favorite pieces of art and I'll kind of talk a little bit about it. And I'd put up the one with the Tales of the Black Widow. And I made a comment like, you know, I have no idea what's in the background of this, but it looks amazing. And somebody had kind of chimed in that they had basically spent tons and tons of hours kind of researching and trying to figure out what was actually in the background of those pieces. And the answer is, nothing in the BattleTech universe, you know, but it looks cool and it doesn't matter that's not BattleTech universe. And I think, you know, for those advertising pieces, it's got to look cool. Like it doesn't have to be, you know, in universe, doesn't have to be canon. It's got to capture the attention. It's got to do what you said. It's got to make people ask questions, be like, oh, that's cool. What is that? You know? Right. And yeah, I was actually in the videos I've been making for, you know, where I kind of build little custom cards, I kind of talk about the flavor text on the end of the cards. Like I try to kind of write the flavor text in a way that it references different things in the universe, whether it's the Amorous Civil War or whether it's, you know, whatever it may be. And just so people would read it, because I imagine kind of people reading it being like, oh, what's that? I want to find out more, you know, because it's kind of the marketing part of my brain, you know, which is, you know, having spent my career in a nonprofit, you know, all you're doing is trying to get the word out and kind of get people onto your cause and whatnot. But yeah, so, you know, fingers crossed, you know, I'd love to see that happen. And, you know, it looks like they're between the HBS arts, which is amazing. Like some of the artists that have done the work there, you know, Jen Ravina or Tran, I have some pieces that I really love. Yeah. If we can just get that art out there in the mainstream, put it in game store, pay the game store, give the game store $100, put up our poster. Here's $100, you know, worth of product or something, whatever they do, it'll help.
Now, I know you were saying with the HBS, but poor Aaron Cahill, I bend his ear all the time. I'm like, hey, he's probably like, shut up, Bobby. Yeah, you got, hey, what about this? And you got to do this. And
yeah.
Think about that. He's like, shut up. He's always like, no, you know, he's nice. But, you know, I've bend his ear, like I said, on the print on demand stuff like crazy. But yeah, but all of it, you know, there's amazing artwork out there. Let's throw it out there for people to see. Put it on, like you said, put it on posters. Throw it in a game store. Mm-hmm. You know, somebody walks in, why do we have to see magic posters everywhere? You know, draw. But and then there's how many game stores. I remember, like, my local game store, they don't believe in carrying tabletop.
Okay.
They only carry RPG and card games. Mm-hmm. And so I went in, and the only tabletop that they carry is actually X-Wing. And that was just because, like, the owner's kid was big into it. So I went in, and I'm like, hey, you know, BattleTech, and I'm a demo agent with CGL right now, too. And so I was like, well, hey, let me try to get my foot in the door, and let me, would y'all carry it and all that? And they're like, what's BattleTech? I think I've heard something about it, but
yeah,
I don't know. And so I brought the boxes in, and I showed them, and they're like, Yeah, go ahead. You can demo it, and I'll put some posters up, and we had did it a couple times and had some people come in, and this is before obviously COVID hit and all that and slowed the roll down, but it was just trying to get. But if I had more like, hey, can you throw this poster up there and leave it up there, and you know, and draw people in and have a link to the website and just push it or whatever, because it does get to that question, you know, like we were talking about of, hey, what is that? And then let me start talking to them about that and sell them on the idea. Like,
yeah,
you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful history to the whole game and just the way it's been developed. And, you know, it's, my sister-in-law says, this goes back to other miniatures and other games. She's like, are you going down there to play with your Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Because these are robot Ninja Turtles.
These are very, very mutated. Very,
yeah, mutated. These are Ninja Turtles and driving around in robots. You know? But you just, you got to get people to understand that there's more to it. And,
definitely.
I think a lot of people have heard of Battletech. They just don't know how to associate it.
Yeah.
And stuff like that.
Well, that's what I'll get this a lot in my gaming group. I'll put out something in Battletech and they're like, oh, is that based on the MechWarrior game? You know, and it's like, oh,
yeah.
I was like, yes, it is. And they're equally awesome. Come on. Exactly. And
you'll
and
even
that's
get
so...
to sit in a 3D simulator.
Yep.
Called Tabletop.
Yeah. And I mean, people, most gamers know of it in some way, whether it's through video games or tabletop or friends playing or whatnot. But yeah, I think, you know, I think there's got to be some creative thinking on that marketing. That's what I've been kind of, you know, playing with, you know, this idea of maybe bringing a proposal to get the card game up and going and back up and going. And if I wanted to step away from athletics and nonprofit and dive into gaming as kind of a next business venture, but been kind of trying to kind of figure out, kind of learn the industry a little bit and see if it's something that could be done. But, you know, when I'm thinking about that, it's just like, you know, something like, you know, if you're having multiple entry points into the universe, that's going to help, you know, and people got to be honest with themselves, you know, sitting down for a 3-4 hour game of, you know, Lance on Let's Battle isn't going to draw most people in, you know, to Battletech, you know, so, you know, plus when the miniatures don't look as cool, you know, to most people as, you know, all the fantasy miniatures of Warhammer. You know, and so, but, right. You know, if you do something like a card game is out there, you know, it's, you know, you can play a card game in 30 minutes, you know, and have a fun experience. And then people that are playing that might be like, oh, well, you know, maybe I'll try out the tabletop too, you know, and you kind of get people in through all those different ways, you know, could be a good way to kind of sell that, but who knows, you know,
well,
stay,
I think just
stay
like
tuned on that idea. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, if they're trying to get people, you know, people's attention span is short. I remember, you know, forever ago, it was nothing in high school for my buddies to come over and, you know, and, oh yeah, we're going to pull an all-nighter. We're going to play Battletech all night long, or we're going to play whatever all night long. And, you know, people don't necessarily have that kind of time. And so if you even look at GW stuff, they're speeding the game up in many ways. They're trying to get it to play faster. And I think the concept and the idea of Alpha Strike is there, but all you had was the rule book.
Yeah.
And then you had to go out and buy the mechs. There was no starter box. Like, you know, we're doing the starter box for Battletech. Mm. We're doing the starter box for, and I think that they somewhat tried to do, you know, they had the 8 lances that you could get and all that kind of stuff, but you had to get the book and then you had to get the lance. And then, oh, wait, I'm playing against somebody else. So now they've got to get a lance. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, let's put it all in a box. Here you go. This is the quick play rules. This is how you do it. Almost make it its own entity, kind of like, you know,
like a City Tech was, you know, back in the day. You know, it was a different way of approaching the same game. But yeah, right. I think definitely the absence, I never thought about that, but the absence of an Alpha Strike intro box, you know, is kind of a glaring hole.
And that would have, I think, given people that basis to understand that, oh, yeah, you can play Battletech differently.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of times you either have the people that like the Alpha Strike or you have the people that like the Classic. And it's a hard mesh in between. Like, when do you do it? When do you not do it? And I think you could almost approach it as two separate entities. And then mesh it in the middle some way. And I'll be the first to say, my tabletop group, we play a modified. We actually play on a 6x4 mat with no hexes.
Okay.
Kind of alpha strike, and we doubled movement, we doubled distances, mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. But when you shoot and you get hit, it's classic. So you roll for location, you mark the checks off for damage, and the games play a little bit faster. You're not having to like count out hexes and terrain and that kind of stuff. And so that part of it has really helped. And you know, we love the 3D terrain and that aspect of it. So that's been enjoyable, but it's just, you know, I've been doing it long enough that I know how to, we know how to tweak it and mesh it and have fun with it.
So. Yeah. That sounds familiar. The most fun gaming I've had recently is we did the exact same thing. You know, we put it on a table with terrain and with no hexes and then just played it normally, class Battletech, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of made the movement a little more fun. And it's more immersive when you have that kind of 3D aspect to the tabletop. Definitely. Well, let's wrap there, Bobby. I appreciate it. Yep. Appreciate it. This is, it's been fun. It's been fun. All right. Look forward to editing this and sharing with everybody and seeing what they have to say.
Yeah, me too. Anytime, man. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. Take care, Bobby.
Yep. Later.